Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome into the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante along with Jeff Byers. Jeff, we've reached the end of the week. We have finally, I think, are going to put the West Virginia game in our rearview mirror. What do you say?
I think that's fair, and let's see what the rest of the season brings.
Exactly. Now, most weeks, end of the week, we would be talking about the next game. Maybe we'll get a couple minutes on Delaware later. I'm just not that interested right now, Jeff. To be honest with you, I'd rather talk to you about James Franklin with his press conference this week, where he talked about a lot of things. And let's start with what I find the most intriguing, the most interesting. Of course, he got asked about the end of the game. Bo Prabula in the game, they went down the field, they scored on the last play. I don't think he said anything that surprised us, but what I thought stood out the most, he's not going to throw Neil Brown under the bus, but he came close to it when he said, he made a point of saying, we have in our number twos playing against their number ones.
Yeah, and listen, at the end of the day, I don't blame West Virginia for playing to the end of the game. I think they are trying to change the culture there. They're trying to establish that whistle-to-whistle mentality. And I think, you know, this is a coach that knows this is a critical season for him personally, for his career, and for the program. And so I don't have a problem with them playing to the final whistle and doing everything they can to put as many points on the board and keep it as relatively close as they can. I just don't think you can then turn around, as he did, and complain about Penn State playing to the final whistle. At the end of the day, to me, it's much ado about nothing. And there was a time, by the way, I've evolved in my thinking on this. Back in the 80s, when I was first breaking into the business, I probably would have been outraged that Penn State or anybody would do that and try to put points on the board toward the end. But I think there's so many different things now in play that weren't in play then. One is the transfer portal, and you don't know if these guys not getting an opportunity to actually play. And there's a difference between being in the game and getting to play. You go in for three snaps that are all kneel downs, you didn't get to play. I get that you'll show on the ledger that, yep, participation on the field for three plays. You know, you didn't play in the game. That's not playing football. So I think there's that component that does factor in. I think there is the competitive component as well. And the other thing that I think, and James Franklin didn't touch on this in the press conference at all, but how many times have you heard, Jim, when somebody goes down, you have to play every play like it's your last play? Well, if you're Bo Prabula, and nobody is wishing that that was his last play, and nobody thinks it is, but you don't know what's going to happen today, tomorrow in practice, the first play of the next game. You genuinely don't know. And you want to provide, I think, an opportunity for these kids to, yes, get better, but also to have some memories that are significant about their playing days at Penn State. And whether it's earlier in their career, late in their career, whatever it is, the more and more I think about it, and more I see the way the games are being played, and we talk all the time about how few opportunities there are to play college football. Love it while you have that opportunity. You're talking about, if you're lucky, maybe 50 to 55 opportunities, and that's if you're able to play in all of the games and your team is good enough to go to all of the bowl games and all of that. You want to maximize that experience for these kids. And there's just no other sport where we get all worked up about somebody, you know, a backup point guard taking a shot in a game that's already in hand. You're up by 12 and he takes a shot with 25 seconds left. Nobody gets outraged by it. It's just, again, to me, part of the competitive nature of sports. And I don't think there's much there because the fact is West Virginia was using its timeouts, went for two. I mean, they were playing to the end. And again, I have no problem with that. But I have no problem then with Penn State saying, yeah, if you're going to keep playing, we're going to keep playing. And Penn State was doing it with its backups.
And I'll add one more aspect to it is I keep repeating this. A couple years ago, an Iowa game, and Penn State put in a backup quarterback, and we all know how that ended up. So here, I'll ask you personally this question, Jeff. We heard good things about Bo Prabula performing in practice. Practice? You know, what does that matter? You know, to try to use the tone Allen Iverson did. But after you saw what Bo Prabula did in a game that obviously mattered to him, that was against the ones on West Virginia, a Power 5 team, what is your feeling about Penn State's backup quarterback position? Do you feel better about it now than you did a week ago, Jeff?
For sure. And the other component that we knew was there, but it just is different when you see it, and you see it against a defense that is, you know, a Division I defense that's trying to stop you, is just how different the dynamic between Drew Aller and Bo Prabula are. They are completely different quarterbacks, bring completely different skill sets to the table. And I just keep thinking in the back of my mind, and I could be completely wrong about it, I just think at some point Penn State may throw that wrinkle in. And listen, there's no reason to be taking Drew Aller out of the game. I get it. And if you take him out and you try to do something specific for Prabula and the offense and it backfires, criticism galore. I understand it. But in the back of my mind, I keep thinking, man, you get an Ohio State or a Michigan that's preparing for Drew Aller all week and getting ready. And listen, they know Prabula's there. It's not that they're going to ignore that element of the game. Everybody knows every starting quarterback is one play away from being out of the game and out of the lineup. But it is such a drastic difference that I just can't help but wonder if in a particular spot, in a particular game, Penn State isn't going to throw Prabula in there and just give that completely different look in a key situation. And I'm not even advocating for it. It's just something that keeps percolating in the back of my mind.
There's no doubt James Franklin keeps teasing that as a possibility. And just that alone makes other teams think about it. My take on it, though, Jeff, I am still concerned about not necessarily a season-ending injury to Drew Aller, but we all know that can happen. But how about just a twisted ankle, just something where he misses a game, and it's not necessarily against Michigan and Ohio State, but maybe it's against Iowa or Michigan State, someone like that, and you need Bo Prabula to win one game for you. I'd like to know he's had some experience on the field. No different than a year ago that I appreciated that Drew Aller got on the field. I felt good last year that if something happened to Sean Clifford, Drew Aller could maintain a certain level of competency. Now, I'm feeling more about that with Bo Prabula, and I'm going to look forward to him playing some against Delaware, maybe throw more than one pass and just get comfortable being on the stage. Now, James Franklin, again, he did the comparison of Bo Prabula to Trace McSorley. And I got to tell you real quick, a couple years ago when Bo Prabula was the high school player, first being recruited by Penn State, I heard that Trace McSorley comparison. I went to watch the high school tape, and I expected to see this little guy. Lo and behold, Bo Prabula is not a little guy.
That is
He's
a fact.
Bigger than Trace McSorley. That surprised me. But his style of play, I can see that comparison. Can you?
Absolutely. And I think he has more ability because of that size to break tackles. And actually, I think on that 5-yard run, you kind of saw that. He is a guy, and not to say that Trace didn't have any power, but I mean, I think he brings a little more horsepower to the running game, along with that shiftiness and that element of the running game from the quarterback spot that you have to be aware of. And from everything we're hearing, and I am not up at practice, but everybody says Pribula does throw a good ball. It might not be Drew Aller. He might not have the complete arsenal that Aller does, but I think in that regard, the Trace McSorley comparison is apt. I don't think this is just a running quarterback who throws when he has to. I think he genuinely brings both elements to the position and is going to be a handful if and when he's in any game this year because of that dynamic that he does bring to the table.
One last thing on Bo Pribula, and James Franklin made this comparison, and I think it's a good one, to Trace McSorley, is how much they're both winners. Trace McSorley, his high school in Virginia, I think he took them to the state championship like 3-4 years in a row. And Bo Pribula at his school, that's, they were not this high school power that he just took over or a private school that essentially recruits. And he took them to the state championship game where they lost to a team of essentially all-stars, okay? But just the fact that he got them there, Jeff, tells me this guy has that little bit of magic that certain quarterbacks have.
Agree completely. And I think you start to go across the board on this team. Certainly, we talk about the importance of depth across the board. And at quarterback, I do think there's reason to be supremely confident that Penn State is very good, two deep. And from everything we're hearing, they feel pretty comfortable even three deep. But I think you start going across the board and you look at the records of these guys, and it's not every one of them, I understand, that comes from winning programs and all of that. But boy, there is a lot of that on that the roster. And I do think that is big, getting that confidence and the mentality that comes from winning at whatever level. I think it's easier to sustain that once it's already there than to try to build it up if it hasn't been there previously.
Well, Jeff, I didn't intend on making this the Bo Pribula segment, although that's the way it ended up. I think that's fine. Next segment, we're going to continue with James Franklin brought up a lot of different topics in his press conference that I want to hit you up about. And there are several other names we got to hit on. And yes, we are even going to talk about the kicking game, Jeff, because that needs to be cleaned up, but we'll get to all that in quarter number two.
Hey, Penn State fans, here is your chance to take something off your bucket list. That's right. Go PSU RV is offering a full range of RV setups ready for a weekend of great tailgating at their Lions Den, which is the closest single game RV overnight lot to Beaver Stadium. You can arrive anytime Friday afternoon. Stay until Sunday morning, avoiding all that traffic. Don't miss this unique opportunity. Go online to gopsurv.com and reserve your RV today.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Jeff, I'm Jim. We're talking Penn State football. More specifically, we're going over James Franklin's press conference from earlier this week. He touched on a lot of topics. And Jeff, this kicking situation where Sanders Sahadak, he missed the two field goals. It doesn't matter that he's a Penn State kid or if he played for someone, I would feel bad for him. He was obviously very highly regarded. I think so far, James Franklin's handling of this situation in his press conferences, the way he talks about it, I'm not sure he could handle it any better than he has.
I agree. And listen, I think it is interesting to me that Sam Ficken was there on Saturday night, because that's exactly who I thought of after the second miss to the right. Is, you know, fans are going to be all over him. And, you know, for crying out loud, Ficken was receiving death threats, which is still among the most absolute absurd, embarrassing, and ridiculous situations in Penn State football history. But listen, kicking is one of those things where Joe Paterno used to joke about it. It's like, well, what am I going to tell him? Kick it straight. Right. So they have obviously people that know what they're doing, trying to work with them on the mechanics. There's no question that Sahadic has the leg. I mean, it's not an issue of he just doesn't have the leg strength. It's how do you get that consistently through the uprights? And both of these guys, according to everybody that's been at practice and according to James Franklin, the consistency has not been there throughout the preseason. So it was not exactly a shock to see that it was not firing on all cylinders Saturday night. But it is one of those things where sometimes it is just a really minor adjustment. And you go back over the years, I mean, Robbie Gould had his struggles. There was nobody that was envisioning the NFL career for Robbie Gould. I'm not even sure if you got him under truth serum that Robbie Gould envisioned the NFL career that he has had. But it was a little adjustment in terms of the spin of the ball, basically, that led Robbie Gould then to be Mr. Consistent and have just a phenomenal NFL career. So listen, it's one of those things where everybody says, yes, they need to correct it. And what do you do exactly to correct it? You keep working in practice just as everybody else is working on everything that they need to do. And you hope that, yeah, this thing gets better quickly. And when you need it in the clutch, which you feel like at some point, whether it's against Ohio State or Michigan or, you know, another game, Maryland or somebody down the road, you certainly feel that at some point 3 points is going to be really critical for this team. But in terms of analysis, it's like, well, yeah, they need to kick it through the uprights, not to the right. Brilliant. Fantastic. Go do that. Thanks.
New kicking coach at Penn State, Jeff Byers.
That's
kick it
exactly
straight and through the uprights. Jeff, I keep using when talking about kickers a comparison to golfing and the golf swing. And I played earlier this week, and there's a big difference between striking the ball well but not straight and just plain not striking the ball well at all. The latter is what I did a lot of this week. But you could see yourself and other golfers who are hitting the ball solid and it's just not straight. They're just not on target with it. And your take on that is, well, that just needs a little bit of an adjustment as opposed to not hitting the ball well at all. My point being, I thought Sahadek actually struck the ball well. It wasn't, you know, a mishit. He just needs to straighten it out. So that's my take on that, my kicking expertise. But the other thing that James Franklin brought up that I found really interesting was he said that Sahadek actually addressed the team. Now, no one has said what he said, but in front of 85 to 100 of your peers, an entire coaching staff, after having that kind of evening, give the kid credit for standing up front and speaking.
Amen. A ton of credit. And I just think across the board, the character and leadership, and yep, that includes a kicker who struggled Saturday night, is really impressive on this team. And I think it is why the expectations and the belief that this could be such a special season is so high among the fan base and among those within the program. And yeah, again, I don't know what else you tell the guy, you just that other than, hey, you're our teammate, we're with you. And I think, yeah, you got to let it play out in terms of who's going to be the starter moving forward. I think you see who's more consistent this week in practice, but what happens in the game does matter. And if Sahadek is consistently better in practice and Falcons keeps hitting field goals in the games, ultimately, I don't think you have any other choice. And it'll be interesting to see if that dynamic is something that plays out or if Sahadek just has a bad night, we put it behind us and move forward and he's the guy. And again, right now, nobody knows the answer to that question. We'll just have to wait and see how it plays out. But I don't think it's a situation where Penn State is in utter panic mode and sees no way out of its kicking woes. But it is a concern, and it is a real issue moving forward for this team, because you certainly are expecting that there's going to be three or four games this year where the kicking game could very well be a big part of the deciding factor on the outcome.
I want to see more touchdowns this weekend than field goals, but it wouldn't bother me if they had a couple opportunities and gave each kicker an opportunity. James Franklin had the opportunity during his press conference to talk up wide receiver Malik McClain. He talked him up as a special teams player and also wide receiver. I keep pointing out he was targeted four times, had four catches. Jeff, my take, I'm very much rooting for Malik McClain for the simple fact he's a different looking wide receiver than what we see otherwise. He is a big guy. That is not what they have with the rest of that group.
No, and I think that is one of the elements that makes this offense so compelling, is I do think there are a lot of different pieces that can fit together in different ways to make this thing work. And you're right, McClain is a really tough matchup problem for opposing defenses, and a really nice luxury, in addition to the tight ends, for Drew Aller to have as a potential target. The more we see, and we're one game in, I realize we haven't seen a ton just yet with this receiving core, but I really do think, rather than a superstar, and listen, Keandre Lambert-Smith may be a superstar as the season unfolds, but I really think they have five, six guys that are really good. And because of the way Aller distributes the football, I just think it poses a really significant challenge for opposing defenses to try to figure out how to approach this Penn State passing game. Because even if you somehow are able to take away a couple of the top targets at receiver, again, I think the depth there, I think Drew Aller's ability to make the reads, and you factor in the tight ends, and you know they really weren't a factor Saturday night, but you know what they're capable of doing and the opportunities that they can provide this offense in terms of keeping the chains moving and picking up chunk yardage. It is all good feels to me surrounding this offense coming out of the opening game.
When talking about the wide receivers, Jeff, I now feel contractually obligated to mention Trey Wallace, okay? During the offseason, I kept talking him up. So I would have been disappointed if he had a disappointing game. You mentioned, you know, about Keandre Lambert-Smith, and a lot of people are talking about him. Rightfully so. I get it. He had the 70-yard pass. And, you know, total, what, 123 yards. Now, the defender on that long pass, I mean, he was within inches of tipping that ball away. Had he done that, you'd have had Lambert Smith with three catches for 50 yards, okay? I know, you can't change the pass. And I like Lambert Smith. But here's what you had with Trey Wallace. Eight targets, seven catches, 70 yards. I'm still on the Trey Wallace bandwagon, Jeff.
Big time. I'm with you. And that's the thing. Again, I think they have a bunch of guys that can be. And, you know, I think you'd look at those stats and say, well, there's a possession receiver for you. And that's an important element not to be overlooked. Listen, Wallace is a playmaker. Make no mistake about it. And I'm not saying he isn't consistent. He obviously is and can't make the shorter catches that you need when called upon. But that's the thing I keep coming back to with this offense and with these receivers is, make no mistake, the next game, it could be exactly flip-flopped. It could be Lambert Smith that has the seven catches for 70 yards or whatever it is, and it may be Wallace or McClain. Again, there's a host of guys that could be the guys that go off on any given week and have the two or three game-changing catches four touchdowns, and any one of the other guys stepping in and, hey, just got open a lot, found the crease in the defense, and Aller delivered the football, and we got, again, the even five-yard gains that you need throughout the course of the game with your passing game. So I just I'm with you. I'm more than good, fantastic with Wallace. But I just this receiving core as a whole, I just think presents so many tough matchups. And I think we're going to see a group that is really consistent at making the routine plays, as well as a group that is going to go out and make some game-changing plays, some spectacular catches. And it does not hurt, again, that you have Drew Aller delivering the football. His ability, and again, it's not a surprise, I understand it, but it is just different when you see it over the course of the game. His ability to keep cool, you know, we talked about some high snaps after the game. His ability to keep cool, keep the eyes downfield, and then to deliver a touch pass when that's needed, to rifle the ball in there when that's needed. I mean, this is a guy that just has the complete skill set, and we're one start into his career. Look out once he gets truly comfortable with the game speed and everything that's happening out there.
Very good, Jeff. That is it for quarter number two. Lots more to go. Stay tuned.
Hey, guys. This is Andrew from 409 Tailgate Club, here to talk to you about our new coffee barbecue dry rub set. Over the years, we've developed some great tailgate sauces and barbecue dry rubs, but our new coffee rubs are totally unique spice blends, low in sodium, and feature Happy Valley's finest coffee, W.C. Clark's, roasted right in the cheese shop in downtown State College. So head on over to 409tailgateclub.com, grab yourself some coffee rubs, and remember, always tailgate with honor. We are.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Jeff Byers. I am Jim Galante. We're talking all things Penn State football. We're specifically getting into James Franklin's press conference where, good for us, Jeff, he hit a lot of different topics, which gave us a lot of different things to talk about. Going to change gears with you a little bit. James Franklin talked about the new rules for this year where they do not stop the clock on a first down unless it's the last 2 minutes of the game. Now, this is like one of my pet peeves is when the NCAA does things and they just lie, okay? We're doing this for player safety. Right. You're doing it for player safety. Anyway, that's not what James Franklin got into. But he did talk about like each team losing about five offensive plays and about 10 plays you lose per game. That it's significant. And he even mentioned he thought the first half just flew by because you have that clock going. I don't know how else to look at it, Jeff, except that we are getting less college football this year because of those rules.
There's no question, and it is a different dynamic now. Coaches will tell you that in most games, it's 4 to 6 plays that decide the outcome, and you never know where those plays are going to be in the game. That's why you keep playing hard throughout it. And if you are taking about 10 plays a game away, right? That's fewer opportunities for either team to go out and make those plays, and it puts more of a burden on the plays that are remaining, being productive and finding those, again, 4 to 6 is generally what the thinking goes, is are the plays that will decide the outcome of a game. So I don't know that there's necessarily a strategic change that you completely abandon your concepts of offense or defense or, yeah, we've got to do this differently. But it is interesting to me to go back to the earlier conversation about getting the reserves in and letting them play. I think all the more reason, again, because there are fewer opportunities to get those kids into games and get them meaningful both experience that benefits your team, but also meaningful experience that gives them part of, you know, what you're hoping they get out of that collegiate experience, which is, yeah, let me go out and play, actually play and compete in front of the 110,000 that are at Beaver Stadium. So I'm not a big fan of it. I think clearly it was done for TV reasons and trying to get the games in a shorter window. But I don't know that there was anybody complaining about the length, unlike baseball. I don't know there was anybody complaining about the length of college football games ahead of time.
Well, and the difference in baseball is they didn't say, oh, we'll do two outs an inning because we want to shorten the game. They shortened that time span in between, so you didn't lose any actual activity. I'm a big baseball fan. I love the pitch clock. Absolutely love it. Here, I'm a big college football fan. They're taking plays away from me. And if you don't know this about me already, Jeff, any opportunity to be a whiny little you-know-what, I will take advantage of. And this is, you know, my opportunity for it. And Mike, like I said, you hit it when it's about television. And if they wanted to go into a shorter block, I've got some advice for you. When you say it's a 7:30 game, start the game at 7:30, not at 7:38, okay? I just saved them 8 minutes of time, Jeff. And I will do that as a free consultant to college football. Solution done. That's it. So anyway, yeah, that's all there is to it. Anyway, let's move on, or I could whine for, you know, the next two segments. Trust me on that one, Jeff. Well, let's move on to more positive things. And James Franklin, he talked a bit about the running game and, you know, Nick Singleton and specifically Catron Allen. And he used the word, I think, efficient in the running game. And for those fans who are waiting for the explosive play, well, you didn't get it. But you know what? At the end of the day, both those running backs averaged over 5 yards a carry. And each one of them, their negative yards, each one of them had only one negative yard, which means only one play did they lose yardage. I'm with James Franklin. I thought the running backs were very efficient and did a tremendous job.
And make it unanimous, at least among the three of us, because I do think, listen, those guys are dynamic. And West Virginia, I think you have to give some credit here, did a good job of keeping the guys in front of them and coming up and making, you know, team tackles and slowing them down to a relative degree so that they didn't break off those big plays. Singleton was really close. Really close on the one. And I think, you know, there are a couple of other plays in there for each of them where it's like, oh man, that was close. Those plays are going to come. I mean, I don't think there's any question that this is going to be a really good rushing football team. And of all of the concerns that you could have coming out of Saturday night, Penn State's ability to run the football, just at least for me, is not one of them. I think those guys are both really good. They take what's there. They create opportunities. And Singleton is a threat. Again, anytime he touches the football, he's a threat. And he'll get his as the season goes on. And truthfully, so will Catron Allen. Those guys are fine.
They definitely are. And just using the eyeball test, watching the game itself, they seem to pretty much max out every carry, which I think specifically Nick Singleton didn't necessarily do at the start of last season, whether it was he was always looking for the home run play, but there were plays he would lose yardage. That's not happening anymore, and I think that's huge. That's why I really like the word efficient that James Franklin used. That's a good way to put it. And something that maybe gets lost in the shuffle, West Virginia, I know, not a great team, but a Power 5 team. Catron Allen only put 10 carries on the tread. Nick Singleton only 13. They combined for 23. That's normally the number of carries you would see from a number one running back. Instead, they were split in half. That's going to pay off somewhere down the line, Jeff, isn't it?
There's no question. And both of those guys will tell you that the hits that they are saving on their body does pay dividends, both for Penn State this year, and I think for both of those guys, it'll pay off for their respective careers moving forward. And I do think both of them will have careers moving forward playing on Sundays. That they're both guys that are going to be playing football for quite a while above and beyond their Penn State careers.
And I think that's another good point. Everybody knows how good they are. You know, Catron Allen doesn't have to have hundreds of carries to prove the point.
Yeah.
And Nick Singleton, you know, he's going to be a high draft pick eventually when he comes out. The extra tread, you know, is going to be valuable. He doesn't need to have a bazillion carries to prove a point. The point's already proven. Speaking of, well, I shouldn't use the word underused in talking about the running backs, but also the concern about the tight ends. And James Franklin hit on this a bit. The tight ends were only targeted either two or three times with one catch, Jeff. And I don't care. I really don't think that's an issue at all.
Again, I'm with you because I think it's something that they have in their hip pocket. I just don't think there was a situation where it was needed Saturday night. The receivers were open. Aller was finding them and delivering the ball on target. That part of the game, much like the breakaway threat that Nicholas Singleton is at running back, that threat of a tight end having a big game and catching a bunch of footballs is there and will be there all season, whether or not it's capitalized upon or not. It's there, and opposing defenses know it. They have to account for it. And whether or not in any specific game they have four or five catches or none, I just don't think is a big deal. As we've talked about all preseason, the nice thing about that tight end room is, yes, those guys, the top two in particular, but I think all of those guys in that tight end room are both good receivers and really good blockers. And that is not insignificant when you're putting together a game plan to try to take on this Penn State offense. If you know that the guy can't block very well, right, you can do some things to adjust around that and make sure you're covering him. If a guy can block well, but he's not a great receiver, then you can, again, do some things with your defense to adjust to that. When they can do both as effectively as those guys can, in particular Johnson and Warren, it is a real matchup problem for opposing defenses.
And the other part to this, and James Franklin alluded to this, is it wasn't a case necessarily that, oh, we're choosing not to throw it to the tight ends. It was the quarterback's going to he's going through his reads, who's available, who's open. When your quarterback completes 75% of his passes, Jeff, I'm not concerned that, oh, he went to the wrong guy when he should have been going to the tight end, correct?
Correct. And the same thing, I think the running backs can be very involved in the passing game as we move forward too. I think that's another great threat that this Penn State offense poses. But yeah, if the receivers are catching 20 footballs during the course of the game and your tight end catches one and you're productive and you're, you know, 80% of the drives for Penn State Saturday night resulted in scoring opportunities. They obviously missed on two of the three field goal attempts, but there were only two drives where they didn't have a scoring opportunity. So whatever you did was working, and there is a lot more, I think, in the arsenal. I don't think we saw anywhere near, an opening of the playbook here Saturday night. And this Penn State offense is just fine. And I think all elements of it, there's reason to be very optimistic about the production they can get throughout the season.
Okay, Jeff, we've got one more quarter to go, and we still have some more topics to hit on. Don't go anywhere. Stick with us.
Hey, Penn State fans, here is your chance to take something off your bucket list. That's right. GoPSU RV is offering a full range of RV setups ready for a weekend of great tailgating at their Lions Den, which is the closest single-game RV overnight lot to Beaver Stadium. You can arrive anytime Friday afternoon. Stay until Sunday morning, avoiding all that traffic. Don't miss this unique opportunity. Go online to GoPSURV.com and reserve your RV today.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
And welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number four. He's Jeff. I'm Jim. We're just reviewing the news of the week, most of which came out of James Franklin's press conference. One other negative note, this is from off the field, Jeff. We found out that, I guess, back in early August, Abdul Carter faced some marijuana possession charges. Does that even matter anymore?
Probably not anywhere near as much as it once did. I think there are just so many different components to this now. One is, again, it was a small amount, personal use. My argument always would be, I just think it's a dumb thing to do with the rules that are in place right now. Why put yourself in that position, that situation, especially with everything you have at stake here with your future, if you're Abdul Carter? That would have been my argument before. And to some degree, I would stick with it. It's just that before, this really could be a black eye looked at very negatively by NFL executives. I just don't know that there's anybody in the NFL that will look at this and say, we would have taken him. Yeah, he could have been a difference maker, but no, that one time he got caught with a little bit of marijuana in his dorm room. I don't see that being an issue any longer. And, you know, who knows, within a year, it may not have even been a misdemeanor in Pennsylvania. We'll have to see what the legislature does, but it's at least a possibility. So in the overall scheme of things, would I wish that he hadn't done that and certainly gotten caught? Yeah, but in the overall big picture stuff, do I think it's a big deal? I don't.
I'm with you. I am a self-described Neanderthal. I'm an old guy, old-fashioned on everything, and even me, I just don't care. I just don't care, and I'm not saying it because it's a Penn State guy. I think across the board, just doesn't matter anymore. So I think we had to mention it, but boy, I'm not sure it matters at all. Let's talk about more important, and that was Abdul Carter on the field, and much like the tight ends, he didn't fill up the stat sheet, and it wasn't until late in the game he was credited with one sack, which is tackle for loss. But other than that, I don't think this was his best game, but I'm not sure West Virginia's style of play lent itself to him making big plays.
Yeah, and Curtis Jacobs obviously did fill up the stat sheet, and this is one of those situations. Now we'll see if a couple of more games in, we're still not seeing production from Abdul Carter, then maybe you start to think that there is a lifestyle issue there that maybe is coming into play. But right now, I kind of look at it similar to the receivers. As long as plays are being made and the linebacker positions are getting the job done, I'm okay with it. There were some missed opportunities, some missed plays by Carter and by the defense on Saturday night. But one game in, and with a quarterback that is as elusive as Garrett Green was, and a running game that is as good as West Virginia's is, and I do think that is a good offensive line. I think they have a good stable of running backs. And again, Green, especially running the ball, is going to give opposing defenses some problems throughout the season. So, yeah, I'm not ready to hit any kind of panic button or be overly concerned about Abdul Carter just yet. I think, again, we'll see how the next couple of games play out and where we're at. But right now, I just think that defense as a whole is really good. I will say, I think some of the expectations maybe need to be tempered in that even the really good defenses out there, if you get against a good offense, you are not shutting them down. I had a buddy of mine that was like, man, we only had 2-3 and outs on Saturday night. What's up with the defense? So wait, is 3-and-out the standard? They only allowed, you know, I've said Penn State had scoring drives on 8 of its scoring opportunities on 8 of its 10 drives. West Virginia only had scoring opportunities on 2 of its 10. That's a pretty good ratio. And I get that, you know, it maybe wasn't the dominant performance that folks were hoping for. But again, I think Eric Green had a lot to do with that. It is an experienced offensive line that West Virginia had. And I think Penn State did a good job for the most part of keeping everything in front of them, making West Virginia earn everything it got. And again, even great defenses in this day and age of college football, you're not getting 3-and-outs 70% of the time and shutting opponents out. That's not a realistic expectation. I think this is a great defense. I think it'll continue to get better, but you got to be realistic in today's game about what defenses are capable of doing in terms of limiting opponents versus just shutting them down altogether.
I also think it was a bit of a stylistic issue with this West Virginia team. They did the things that it's the toughest style for this defense to play. And they got themselves in positions to get a 3rd-and-1. And they outplayed Penn State on those short yardage situations. Now, that's not unusual for a team to convert when it's 3rd-and-1 or 4th-and-1. But this West Virginia with the All-American center, couple of good guards, good running back, and also the quarterback on passing plays. He's not someone who's going to stand back in the pocket as a target for these defensive ends for Abdul Carter. So stylistically, they just weren't the kind of team you're going to see those kind of splash plays that we came to expect, especially the second half of last year. Let's hit a couple more things, Jeff. In talking about the offensive line, at one point, James Franklin said Hunter Norzad is suffering with a couple bumps and bruises. Let me remind you, the last time he mentioned an offensive lineman having bumps and bruises, a week later, he medically retired. So, James, I wish you would clarify a little more what your bumps and bruises mean.
Yeah, and that is the concern. We talk about the depth on this team, and there is depth, but it's like anything. You get a couple of injuries there, and all of a sudden that depth becomes very thin in short order. And offensive line is one of those groups that you want to keep that cohesion. Again, an injury, even if the next guy up is very close in terms of talent level, sometimes it's just a little, you know, a step here or there that just feels a little different. That chemistry on the offensive line is just like unlike anything else in football in terms of the way they work together, and you have to have that confidence that you know exactly where your teammate is going to be when you're coordinating everything there. And again, two guys could do everything exactly right, but it's just going to be a different feel for the other guys. The stride's going to be a little longer or shorter, and the quickness, all of it, it's just different with each individual. So, you know, now you're potentially a couple of guys down. I do think that is a concern. I will say, if it is bumps and bruises and it's a situation where he plays through it and is out there Saturday, or maybe sits out the Delaware game and then is good to go the rest of the season, fantastic. But you do start to get a little concerned if you're a Penn State fan right now that you don't want to have to go digging too far into the depth along that offensive line.
Okay, Jeff, we've got a couple minutes left. I've been avoiding this game this weekend. Other weeks we'll talk about the game and prepare for it. But it's Delaware, so I really, really hope there's no issues to come this game. However, this is an opportunity to play more players, get more of the backups in. Is there anyone in particular or any position group where you're saying, you know what, I'm really anxious to see a couple of the backups in those positions play?
Well, we saw Tony Rojas on Saturday night, and I think he got kind of caught in between there a little bit on the one touchdown. I am interested to just see his continued development, and I think he will get a good bit of playing time here on Saturday against Delaware. And I'm just, again, just curious to see kind of how he continues his progression here at linebacker. The other group that I am interested in is, we just touched on, is the offensive line. And, you know, I thought that group, the second team group, did a really good job, obviously, on Saturday night, got points on the board. And I do think, as you're looking at this roster right now and this team and the possibilities, and again, now we're already talking about the possibility of a second backup offensive lineman needing to be inserted into the starting lineup. I do think that's a group that you want to continue to develop and get game experience. And I think that's probably the group I'm most interested to see how they continue, again, to progress and work together when they're out there.
I also want to see Bo Prabula get significant snaps. I think that's the obvious one. You know, typically in a blowout game, you'll see the starter in at least through the first half, maybe the first series of the second half, then you make the changeover. But I'd like to see him run the normal offense, throw the ball more than one time, you know, just to get comfortable out there. And you also mentioned the offensive line. I'd like to see a couple of those freshman offensive linemen out there that we heard so much about going into this season.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if we do see them, or if Franklin decides, hey, let's save those in case we need them down the road. And, you know, that redshirt game comes into play here with the four appearances. It'll be interesting to see if any of them play, when they play, and then, you know, how much, because you might get an indication that, yeah, you know what, one of these guys or more, but may be kind of counted on to be a bigger component of this offense as the season continues to progress.
I really like that four-game rule for the freshman, or the, you know, and still preserve your red shirt. But I also look at it like this. If these guys are as good as we think they are, you're only going to get a maximum of 4 years out of them anyway, and probably more likely only 3 years. So I don't want to waste a year redshirting, and I don't also want to take away an opportunity for them to play, fearful that, oh, I might need them late in the season for that fourth game, or, you know, maybe it'll turn into his fifth game then and burn a redshirt. I just don't want to play defensively like that. Jeff, that is it for the show. Everyone, enjoy the game this weekend. Make sure you tune in to the Keystone Kickoff Show next time.
Hey guys, this is Andrew from 409 Tailgate Club, here to talk to you about our new coffee barbecue dry rub set. Over the years, we've developed some great tailgate sauces and barbecue dry rubs, but our new coffee rubs are totally unique spice blends, low in sodium, and feature Happy Valley's finest coffee, W.C. Clark's, roasted right in the cheese shop in downtown State College. So head on over to 409tailgateclub.com, grab yourself some coffee rubs, and remember, always tailgate with honor. We are.